see I've not done this for a while. Put 50 pence in there. Switch on that. Yes, it's the Zip & Co podcast again from Weymouth, Dorset, UK. This is just a quick show for Halloween 2014. On this show, I've got a performance of The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. And other things, so keep your ears open. I've been doing quite a lot of stuff since I last did a podcast. We had a sad family tragedy in the house. My mother passed away in March. I also had a holiday in the United States. We went to visit some of Gina's relatives in Los Angeles. We actually covered over 2,000 miles in the first week, and I got to fulfill a number of dreams, which is always a great thing to do on holiday. I visited the Little Ailey Inn very close to Area 51, which has been a dream of mine since I was a kid. I also went to San Francisco again. I've been there twice in my life, and it was always a great pleasure to visit. What else? Yes, another thing I did, I managed to meet Douglas Welsh and his wife at Universal Studios. I did an interview with Douglas on Skype some time ago, and it is now on YouTube, so I'll put a link to that interview on my show notes. It was a great pleasure and honour to meet him after we've conversed so long on Skype and email. While we were in San Francisco, also, Gina and I and her relatives rode on the San Francisco Duck, which is an amphibious vehicle that travels around the city and also drives into San Francisco Bay. Yes, that is the mournful call of the duck that everybody has to do when they see people on the street or listen to the great rock music on board the bus. All right, let's get down to what we're supposed to be here for, a performance of The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. I hope you enjoy. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door, only this and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow, vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow for the lost Lenore. for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more. Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. Sir, said I, or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is, I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was their whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the tame chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping, something louder than before. Surely, said I, surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more. Open here I flung the shutter, then with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mane of lord or lady perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, perched and sat and nothing more. Then the ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly grim and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore? Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Much I marvel this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door, bird or beast above the sculpted bust above his chamber door with such name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on that placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if its soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further then he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before, on the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, Nevermore. Startled, the stillness broken by a reply so aptly spoken. Doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster, till his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore, of never, nevermore. But the raven, still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore, meant in croaking evermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall pass, ah, nevermore. Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer, swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee by these angels he hath sent me respite, respite and nepenthe from my memories of Lenore. Quaff, O quaff, this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, or bird, or devil, whether tempter sent, or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked upstarting, get thee back into the tempest and the night's plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul has spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door, quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadows on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore. You have been listening to The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe, read by Peter from Zip Media at www.zipmedia.com. Music by Kevin MacLeod at incompitech.com. On my normal podcast, I include a spot called Weird Stuff that has unusual stories that kind of pique my interest. If you have any weird stories on UFOs or ghosts or all kinds of things that you've encountered, you can get in touch with me now on my email at weirdweymouth. That's weirdweymouth at gmail.com. You can also leave a telephone message on my phone line that you can now see on my new website. You can access the website at www.zip, That's ZZIPP media.com. If you go to my show notes, you can find a link on the links section there on the show notes. This is a story I got from a friend of mine in Derbyshire who encountered something very strange when he was a small boy. Okay, here's his story.
Weird stuff!
Yes, it's weird stuff again. This time I appealed for anybody who'd had any strange encounters to tell me their stories on my Facebook. And I got an email from Jack, a listener in Derbyshire. And he told me that he saw a UFO back in 1952 when he was 12 years old. And he actually sent me his story, which I'll just access for you now. This is an extract from his book that he's going to publish shortly. His story goes: we used to go hiking regularly on Sundays, getting the 8 or 9:45 a.m. train from Bellevue Station to Hayfield. From there we would do one of three things: walk to Edale, climb Kinder Scout, or just laze the day away next to the trout stream in the nearby park. This particular Sunday, which I will remember the rest of my life, we decided to hike to the bottom of Kinder Scout and then scale it via the downfall, rocks that were hollow inside and which had to be scaled by wedging your back on one side with your feet on the other before easing yourself up one part at a time. We'd set off from Hayfield Station about 10:20 a.m., having caught the later train from Bellevue that particular day. There was myself, Donnie Davis and Brian Castle, all of us going our usual route via the picturesque trout streams along the well-trodden trail towards the large reservoir and then on through the woods towards our ultimate destination. We'd been walking for a while and were about 200 yards from the top of the rise which overlooked the reservoir when all of a sudden I had this compulsive urge to look up at the sky. And there it was, the most gigantic flying saucer you could imagine. After I pointed it out to the others, we all ducked behind an old Roman wall behind this field, still watching in amazement, but also very frightened. We watched it, completely dumbfounded, for about 5 minutes, when, all of a sudden, it started to descend towards us. We crouched down lower behind the wall, in panic now, as we all blurted out together, "God, it's coming towards us, it's seen us!" Then it stopped its descent and hung in the sky, now only about 400 feet above us, for about another 30 seconds or so, before then starting to climb higher again. It stopped once more, moved sideways slowly, and then at a speed you couldn't imagine, it accelerated away and disappeared. I don't think any of us moved for about 15 minutes, absolutely in awe, and wondered what we had just seen. "Who the fuck's going to believe this?" Brian blurted out. "Who indeed? It didn't really matter as far as I was concerned. I'd seen it, and just seeing it, especially at the tender age of 13, was to leave an impression on me and the way I thought about such matters for the rest of my life." The flying saucer itself was a dirty grey-silver colour, and it hovered roughly 600 feet from the ground. The size of it I can only describe as like looking up at the underside of a park roundabout. If it hadn't moved, I suppose we might have said it was a hallucination, but it did move, changing course and direction. Eventually we moved on, meeting two more hikers a bit further along the path. "Did you see that flying saucer?" we all said at once in our excitement. "We certainly did," they replied. "We're stopping at the nearest police station to tell them." "They'll never believe you," Brian said. "They'll just laugh." "They won't laugh at this," one of them said, Hope holding up a camera. "I photographed it." With that, off they went. God, we all thought, it'll be in all the papers tomorrow. The next day, which was also the first day back at school after the summer holidays, we dashed to our local paper shop, Bowden's, and bought a paper, naturally expecting to see a headline story with a photograph, but to our amazement, there was nothing. We eventually bought a copy of every paper in the shop with our dinner money, and the only reference we found was to a flying saucer was hidden away in a page in the Daily Express, simply saying, There were several sightings of a UFO over Derbyshire Moors yesterday. We were so disappointed and dismayed that Jack Bowden, the youngest son of Mr. and Mrs. Bowden, said, "Why are you so upset? What were you looking at anyway?" When we told him, he burst out laughing and said, "The only flying saucers you've seen are them toffee ones in the penny tray." That was just the beginning of a bad day, as they wouldn't believe us at school either, although one or two did say they wished they'd been with us. I suppose it was too much to expect that anyone would believe us, especially as we used to be playing pranks anyway. Even my old family laughed, although I seem to remember my mum being a bit sympathetic. I've told the story many times over in the last 40 years. Some people have listened out of courtesy, I suppose. Some have totally pooh-poohed the idea, saying, "Come on, Jack." Others have listened in awe and stupefaction, not knowing whether to believe me or not. But as I've said before, at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is that I know I saw it. And in that, I consider myself to be very fortunate indeed, knowing conclusively all my life that there is life on other planets, that I have seen something that has been denied most of the population of Earth, an alien spacecraft. The two lads who took the photographs went to the police with their story as they had said they would. The police in turn asked them to leave the camera so they could send it to be looked at by experts. When they rang the police then to inquire about the outcome, they were told that none of the films had turned out. On collecting the camera from the station, the following week they found that the camera had no film in it, but were then handed a new roll of film by the police, who said it had been sent back with the camera as compensation. Their story appeared 30 years later in a book about UFOs. Just three of the people knew they were telling the truth about what happened that day. Fortunately, the comfort I now derive some 50 years later is the fact that those disbelievers who thought it complete hooey then are now, due to masses of evidence and more intelligence, beginning to wonder themselves where the UFOs exist. And that does give me great satisfaction. Unfortunately, there are people who make up stories about seeing UFOs who are subsequently ridiculed when their stories prove to be rubbish, and they detract from so much from those genuine people like myself who are telling the God's honest truth, the sort of on the life of everyone I hold dear truth. Believe me, it was an awesome spectacle. It truly was. And I will remember it until the end of my days. There and ends Jack's testimony. So what do you think? Do you know anybody who was involved with UFOs in Derbyshire in the 1950s? Do you know the other people who were involved in this case? What was the book that the three other hikers were mentioned in? Have you got any stories that you would like highlighted in the Weird Stuff spot on this show? Let me know. You can call my comment line. You'll find the number on the show notes. Or contact Zipshow, ZIPPSHOW, at gmail.com. Or you can join my UFO page, my UFO profile, Fastwalker 1, by going to Facebook and searching for Fastwalker 1, or one word, Fastwalker 1. So that's it for Weird Stuff for the moment. Remember, if you have any stories, please send them in and we'll get read out on the show. Thanks a lot.
Weird Stuff!
I would like to personally thank Jack for his story. If you have any stories you would like to get on the show, you can get in touch with me on my new Facebook profile, which is called Fastwalker 1. That's Fastwalker 1. If you know about UFOs, you know what a Fastwalker is. If you look for Fastwalker 1 on Google, it will bring up, I'm sure, the Facebook page. I'd like to thank everybody who's supported me on Facebook recently, liking my photographs, I now do photographs for sale that I do on Pinterest. So if you'd like to go to Pinterest, you'll find a link on my show notes that will take you there. Also on my new website at www.zipmedia.com. That was built for me by Sarah at belugi.com here in Weymouth, and she did an extraordinary, wonderful job. I'm working on a promo for Sarah at belugi.com, so hopefully I'll have that done for the next show. I would also like to thank Andy for the intro mix right at the very beginning, the one with the big explosion. Andy is with Desolation Media here in Weymouth. He's also the producer with the Zag Band, who you can hear an interview with on one of my previous podcasts. So I think it's maybe 23 or 24. Go down and have a listen to them. So that's it for this time, this special show here on the Zip & Co. podcast. If you want to contact me, you can on zipshow, zzipp, @gmail.com, or call the number on the show notes or the new website and leave a message. Okay, I'll talk to you soon. It's Peter at the Zip & Co. podcast, and Zip Media is out. Bye for now.
We must plan for tomorrow night.
Why? What are we going to do tomorrow night?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
The Zip & Co. podcast is a media production by zipmedia.com from Weymouth, Dorset, UK.